Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And I'm going to introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back, Major Travis Yates. He goes by Dr. Travis Yates, a.k.a. TravisYates.org. I mean, this guy is like all over the country. I'm glad he took time out of his very, very busy schedule to join us today. So thank you so much, Doctor. Also, Lieutenant Randy Sutton from Las Vegas Metro Police Department, the founder of the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. I love it. He's got that Vogue thing going today. And not to be outdone, we have Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. And Betsy, don't do that movement again. Betsy needs no introduction. She's also the spokesperson for the NPA, the National Police Association. And our first two stories are from NPA. I can't wait to get into those. A lot going on. And also, we have Chuck Springer. He's a former commander, LAPD, and he finally got smart. He left California, and he came over to Florida with me, and so he's living just a little bit south of me. And so, Lieutenant Chuck Springer, thank you so much for being on the show. Guys, a shout-out to our sponsors. You know, Gauls is our title sponsor at Gauls.com. Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. And thanks to them, I think that we're wrapping up our eighth week on satellite radio. It's been absolutely fantastic. Shout-out to Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and SafeGuard Recruit. Our streaming sponsor, and thanks to them, we're reaching about 1.5 million people, and that is just on the stream. Also, Two Bells, they built our new online store at leoroundtable.com. So go to leoroundtable.com, look for our online store in the upper right hand corner, check out our cool gear. And we don't charge, I don't make a dime off of that. We're just trying to get our gear out there. And I just ordered 3 shirts the other day. My cost is the same thing that you guys pay, and it's low. So check that out. And also a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. Whew. Now, let's see, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? We got two main topics today. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. And the first one, it's from the National Police, nationalpolice.org, National Police Association. Local police cooperation with ICE builds, not erodes, trust in cops. You guys have been hearing the wrong side of the argument. And we just covered last week there was a Tampa in my neck of the woods. We hosted a meeting of mayors from all across America that are on the other side of this issue. So Betsy's going to set this topic straight for us. Also, the National Police Association, they're backing the Safe and Open Streets Act. What is that? We're going to tell you. Charges have been dropped against the last law enforcement officer in the Christian Glass case. That's the kid that was in the car having a mental episode. And, he was scared. His car's like stuck in a ditch. And we had a cop standing up on the hood of the car, pointing the gun at Christian Glass, and he ended up shooting him through the glass windshield. And Christian Glass had a knife at the time. And there's been a lot of mistakes, and we've learned a lot. Law enforcement has since that. Connecticut State Police trooper justified in shooting a suspect during a December 2023 incident. We're covering that. Harris County deputies fatally shoot a suspect who's armed with a large butcher knife. I hate knives. Then CHP, they're paying $10 million for paralyzing a Salinas man that was high on meth, armed with a gun and pointed at them at the time. What in the world's going on in California? I can't wait for Chuck to tell us that one. San Diego officers fatally shoot a guy. He's armed with a brass knuckle knife after a chase and a crash. And then finally, Oklahoma police released video footage what led up to a deadly shooting of a rape suspect. Yeah, and this guy bails when they're coming in his house, and he's naked, and he jumps the fence, and there's a cop waiting for him. So anyhow, let's go ahead and start off with a couple NPA articles. We've got about 8 minutes before we take our first commercial break. Nationalpolice.org and also Creative Loafing, which is CLTampa.com, local police cooperation with ICE builds, not erodes, trust in cops. So what in the world is up with the mixed messaging? In Miami, according to our article, Miami Herald article, it warns that a sheriff's department decision to sign a 28-7G partnership agreement with ICE. So it's a partnership agreement with ICE. And of course, they've come up with some new laws saying that ICE can employ assistance from local law enforcement to help them, and they get compensated federally. But they said that it will erode trust in cops. Now, in truth, this partnership model, it's operated for nearly 3 decades, according to our article, removing violent felons and winning broad public approval, and it also gives local sheriffs a federal backup that protects law-abiding non-citizens and citizens alike. Now, The article portrays a handful of protesters as authentic voice of the community, and it insists that any cooperation with ICE will actually terrorize neighborhoods. And no data is offered by these guys. No crime victims are consulted. Instead, the report, they're using slogans like abolish ICE, keep families together, while ignoring the families that are shattered by repeat offenders who cycle in and out of jails in areas where local offenders lack immigration authority. Now, this section 287G of the Immigration Nationality Act, it allows DHS to deputize local officers, like I mentioned, at federal expense to identify and detain criminals, criminal aliens specifically, in local custody. Now, it talks about the nationwide ICE, the fiscal report from 2024. It records over 81,000 arrested criminals with over 500,000 combined charges, thanks in part to local partnerships. So you can't deny, when you have stats like this, you can't deny the effectiveness of the relationship that local law enforcement, and I'm going to use the word should have, with the feds. And I say should because we've got some other people that don't want it to happen. It goes on to say that trust does not spring from ignoring the law. It's built when honest people see predators carried away in handcuffs. And it goes, yes, some undocumented residents, they may fear contact with the police, but public policy in a functioning republic is shaped by the rule of law, not by the anxieties of the people who violated it. And then it talks about some blue cities via their allies and local government. Car thieves are writing policies for traffic, for traffic cops, and rioters are writing policies for riot response. And in most of the United States, however, crime prevention through effective law enforcement, it builds trust between law-abiding public and police. And notice he said the law-abiding public, not the other way around. Now, let me just mention, last week we talked about the title, Tampa Mayor Jane Castor, which is, I live in Tampa. The mayor said that local cops should not be engaged in ICE raids. And so they did a U.S. Conference of Mayors here last weekend, and it was, they had a resolution, and they voted on it, upon federal authorities focusing their deportation actions on convicted criminals and not undocumented individuals who contribute to their local communities. And of course, they use the word undocumented and don't use the word criminal, because there's no way you can be over here illegally and not have violated the law. It said that there were 179 mayors from across the country here in Tampa last weekend. They gathered for their annual summer meeting. And here's the resolution that they want, Betsy. They want to delineate the appropriate roles of local and federal officers in protest response. They're calling on Immigration and Customs Enforcement, so ICE, to focus deportation actions on convicted serious criminals and not on undocumented, hardworking individuals who have families, they pay taxes, they contribute to the local. Well, of course, that's mostly what ICE is doing anyhow, from what I understand. And then they're urging federal officials to notify local authorities in advance. Ha ha, I'll bet they want to know in advance before they do any ICE actions, and to conduct the actions in as orderly, in a unprovocative way as possible. And of course, Nancy, we know that, you know, when you give the information to these people that are screaming for it, you know why they want it. They just want to warn the people that you're coming. And Betsy, your mic is muted, but you do have pretty lips when they move. So we do appreciate that.
Okay, Betsy, not Nancy. He did it again, Randy. You heard it.
Did I do it again? I don't know.
I have no idea where that comes from.
I'm sorry. Betsy Brainerd Smith, you're up.
So here's the thing. You know, it's a funny thing about federal law. They don't have to get the mayors involved when they're enforcing federal law. So yeah, the mayors are making these demands, and you know what? If the mayors don't want the federal government involved, the first thing they should have done at their big meeting there in Tampa is a pledge not to take any more federal money for everything. Maybe we should start with that. But anyway, the National Police Association, what we're doing with this is we're disputing the fact that this cooperation between local law enforcement and federal law enforcement causes terror and consternation in the quote-unquote community. What we're finding out in poll after poll after poll is that people want mass deportation. And this, you know, the 287G agreement has been around since every one of us on this screen were cops. And we all worked under this. And, you know, people need to understand that mass deportations are going to happen. It is safer for the community. It is safer for law enforcement to cooperate with these efforts, regardless of what just a few quote unquote activists have to say.
You know, and Travis, I know your mic is open. Betsy, I got a question. You know, in reading that Tampa article, it said that, I don't know if they were purposely careful with the words, but they said they used the word should. Local law enforcement should not. They didn't say cannot, didn't say could not. They said should not. So, and of course, we have Governor Ron DeSantis here in the state. So it seems like they're going up against the governor on what he has imposed the feds to be able to do here in Florida.
Well, and, you know, here's the thing. I don't know if you saw this morning, but Key West, the city of Key West, has just voted this morning to no longer cooperate with immigration authorities, et cetera, going against what Governor DeSantis has has said is going to happen. So you're seeing a little bit of pushback around Florida, but you're absolutely right, Chip. When they use that that phrase, they should. You know, they understand that they cannot mandate this. And again, that these mass deportation and these ICE raids and these arrests of primarily really bad people are happening. And yes, does the occasional, you know, busboy or whatever get caught up in these raids? Sure, they do. But as you so aptly pointed out at the beginning of the show, you are a criminal if you are here illegally. You are not undocumented. You are an illegal alien. And right now you have the chance to self-deport and get some really good financial perks and a free ride home. More people need to take advantage of that.
Well, Travis, I know you're coming up, Travis. You know, I'm thinking though that Key West is pretty close to the Everglades, and they just may need to expand the boundaries of the alligator alcatraz is what I'm thinking. But we got 14 seconds. We're going to go to our first commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know that we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And when we consider going online, it's almost endless, right, the possibilities. But I want to remind you about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please go to our title sponsor at Gauls.com. And again, if you haven't been to Gauls yet, Gauls.com, they've literally got everything except for guns and ammo, and they have gift cards. We give away a couple every day or every week on this show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card. They'll be your new best friends. All you have to do is go to Gauls.com to get one, and we're going to be giving away one today, actually. Again, the website, it's Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show, joined by Betsy Brantner Smith, retired sergeant, retired major from Tulsa Police Department, Travis Yates, also Lieutenant Randy Sutton from Las Vegas Metro Police Department, Lieutenant Chuck Springer, former commander, LAPD. Thank you guys so much for being on the show. We've been talking about is it good or bad? Is it good for the public or bad for the public for the local law enforcement to work with the feds as far as, ICE enforcement of illegals or undocumented, as the city mayors are saying. And Betsy Brantner Smith just broke it down very well. Travis Yates, the floor is yours.
Well, Bet, you're right. Betsy nailed this issue, and I'm glad that she addressed this mythical falsehood that Hispanics are running around scared because of this. This has been going on for decades. In fact, the polling, as Betsy mentioned, doesn't reflect that. Donald Trump, since 2016, has picked up 40% of the Hispanics have swung towards him, to the point to where in the last election, it was just -3 on the Republican side. So Republicans went from barely getting a vote from an Hispanic to almost pulling up even. And the only people you can thank for this is Joe Biden and the mainstream media, because they let it get so ridiculous. Because before this, if you remember, we danced the dance. The Republicans, oh, we don't want to do this, and the mayors would do this, and we would enforce, they would enforce federal law, but they didn't want to enforce it too much, and they had to cooperate with all the county jails. Well, it got so bad, I'm so glad we just ripped the Band-Aid off and said, you know what, the law's the law. You're all going if you're breaking the law. Oh, but I've been here 20 years, and I have a job. Well, in 20 years, you didn't figure out to do it legally. There wasn't an opportunity in the last 20 years to do it legally. So people are tired of it. And the reason they're tired of it is because they flooded this country with millions and millions of illegal immigrants that created havoc in the economy and the social programs and everything else. So the very people that are complaining the most, the Democratic Party and the mainstream media, they're the reasons it's happening. And it's not going back because the public sentiment has swung to where it doesn't have to go back. So they can just blame themselves.
And remember, the Democrats were in full charge for 2 years, and they didn't do a damn thing to fix the broken system that they constantly talk about.
Wait a minute. They said it wasn't broken, okay? They said, I know this because KJP told me personally that it's the most secure border that we've ever had.
Exactly.
So. Wow. That's good. Well, are you guys ready to move on to the next one? Then we've got another NPA article here. So let's go ahead and jump into this one. So nationalpolice.org, the National Police Association, they're backing the Safe and Open Streets Act. Some people may be scratching their head. What in the world is this? So in Indianapolis on June 22nd, 2025, the First Amendment, they say, protects each citizen's guaranteed right to peaceful expression and lawful assembly. I think we all have to agree with that. The U.S. Constitution does not, however, give license to engage in lawless acts or violate the rights of others, blocking public roads. And we got, if you guys have been watching TV or watching the news, everybody knows blocking public roads is a reckless act, causes traffic accidents, injuries, perpetuates violence. And man, they just basically will shut down everything within a town, and good luck going to work or getting home. It disrupts daily grind of commerce, ultimately harming American businesses and law-abiding citizenry. So it goes on to talk about, to protect Americans from the growing form of anarchy, Senator Thomas Tillis, and he introduced Safe and Open Streets Act. It's Senate Bill 2115, and it makes it a federal crime to intentionally block or conspire to block a public road. And just out of curiosity, in California, it's just a misdemeanor, and they hardly ever enforce it. Now, the National Police Association, the NPA, they are fully endorsing this bill, which is currently under consideration by the Judiciary Committee. It goes on to say that this is where it goes. The Safe and Open Streets Act would amend Title 18 of the U.S. States Code. So we're talking about federal code here. It's a federal criminal penalty for knowingly interfering with or conspiring to interfere with the flow of traffic on a public street. So even if you're just setting this up, you're the ringleader, you can still be on the hook for it. Obstructing any public thoroughfare would result in a penalty of fines, a maximum term of 5 years imprisonment, or both. So yeah, that's a little bit more of a slap than a misdemeanor with at most a 1 year jail imprisonment. Of course, in California, that would never happen. But Betsy Brantner Smith, the NPA, has been a little bit busy lately. That's a yes.
Yeah, they really have. Yeah. And we have a terrific legislative director. And, you know, we have a great relationship with so many legislators. Ted Cruz came on my show a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of pro-law enforcement legislation out there, and they're listening. These politicians are listening because they know that the majority of America is pro-police. Now, what we're trying to do is get people to understand that very often local law, local prosecutors are not going to do anything about people breaking the law, like blocking streets. You know, this got really popular in St. Louis in 2014, and it's just spread across the country in the last 11 years. So what we're trying to do is open the door for federal prosecutors to be able to do something when we're seeing these people obstruct traffic. You know, I'm sure Chuck has seen this in LA. And so that's what we're encouraging our federal legislators to do, is give some federal teeth to law enforcement as well as prosecutors to do something about these little pukes that want to block traffic, disrupt, which prevents law enforcement and firefighters and other first responders from getting to where they go, as well as interrupting the working general public. So we appreciate Tom Tillis for taking this on, and we'll see where it goes.
So Chuck, is Betsy making you miss LA a little bit?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. But she's right. You know, the challenge, well, look at where these problems happen, right? They happen in these blue states, sanctuary cities, sanctuary states. Most of these crimes are misdemeanors. You got the George Gascons out there that aren't going to take action. So really, you're forcing our hand or the hand of law enforcement to make these felonies where you're forced to take action. The challenge will be, you know,
thanks,
getting
Chuck. Commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, in today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety, and it's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. And that's where MyTech, a division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MyTech provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. And their EcoProtect nitrile gloves, they offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind when it comes to high-risk environments. And plus, their MyShield disinfectants and their sanitizers, they actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact. And we're not done. They continue the kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. So when safety is non-negotiable, you can trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need. And you can learn more about how to equip your team today by simply going to compliantechnologies.com/mytech. Again, compliantechnologies.com/MITEK, because the best defense starts with the right protection. compliantechnologies.com/mytech. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up next week, July the 9th, bulletproof DUI reports. Sign up at bluethegold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Again, that is at bluethegold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by, and I'm trying not to be distracted by stuff that Randy Sutton's put up on the screen. We've got Major Travis Shades from Tulsa. We've got Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, Randy Sutton from Las Vegas Metro, Chuck Springer from LAPD. Thanks for being on the show, guys. We've been talking about the NPA's endorsement and support of a Safe Streets Act. And you know, if you have a clue on anything that's been going on in the news over the last few years, you're aware of how these groups, and it's a small minority that's vocal, and they're violent and they're radical, and they basically will move in and shut down a jurisdiction, a city, and they just life as you know it will end. And now they're proposing a federal statute that will give them up to 5 years in prison if they violate it, a fine, or both, unlike California, where it's just a misdemeanor that they never use. So I know I got two open mics, Lieutenant Randy Sutton and Sergeant Betsy Smith. So go ahead, guys. Well,
I have a question that Betsy may be able to answer. So, of course, I'm 100%, in support of this. Does it have to be a federal highway, or can they use this for the when these animals take over the intersections and hold off the police, attack law enforcement during these intersection takeovers? Would it work under that, or does it have to be a federal highway?
No, it actually doesn't. Any protest or act that violates this particular law, and it drills down pretty good, the U.S. attorney in that area can step in and file charges. And that's what makes it such a great law. Wow. Because again, it gives us, you all know, everybody on this screen has been in this position where, you know, you can't get someone charged or the law doesn't apply to what you want to charge them with. And that's why we're trying to do this. And this is, this is unfortunate because, I will say personally, as a conservative, I don't like more laws. I don't like government stepping in, especially the federal government. But unfortunately, in this day and age, the federal government is having to reach down into local jurisdictions, really to protect the communities, to protect law enforcement officers. And that's what we're having to do right now.
Oh, I love it. Well, guys, excellent. I know that, let me just point out, I have people that are entering the golf contest gift card giveaway, but they're not giving me an email address. So you can't enter unless you give us your email address, because I have no way to get the card to you in case you win. But good commentary. If you guys are ready, I tell you what, let's go ahead and jump to a video component, if that's okay with you guys. I want to make sure that we get this in. And there's a new one that came out at rumble.com. This is Butters, the name of the channel. Connecticut State Police trooper justified in shooting a suspect during a December 2023 incident.
Hey, come here. No, don't hold on. Come here. Put your hands in the car.
That happened, bro.
In the car. Do you got your license on you, bud?
No.
All right. Go ahead, put your hands behind your back. You're going to be detained. Hold on!
Aye.
Taser. Stop! Stop! Trooper running. Get on the ground, dude! Get on the ground!
So it happened over a year ago, and we're in Killingly, Connecticut. Killingly, don't you like that name, Killingly? The state's inspector general determined that a state trooper was justified when he shot a suspect who pointed a gun at him after the suspect took off running from a gas station in Killingly back in December 2023. So it starts off, it's in the afternoon, December 30th. So just before the end of the year in 2023, and we're at a Chuck E's mobile gas station. Connecticut State Police Trooper Joseph Godbit, he noticed that there's a car at the gas station, and the vehicle was connected with some robberies in Putnam and in Foster in Rhode Island. So the trooper pulls his cruiser behind the car, activates his light. The driver, who had already stepped out of the vehicle, was walking towards the convenience store, the gas station, and the trooper says, "Hey, come back to the car to Mueller, our bad guy." And so Reuben Mueller is our bad guy, 41 years old. So the guy comes back to the car. Trooper detains him, and he asks him if he has his driver's license. The guy said no. And the trooper says, "Hey, put your hands behind your back." And so that's, of course, when the guy breaks bad. There's some touching going on. Trooper's trying to get a hold of the guy, and then the guy just kind of breaks clean and starts running through the parking lot. I wouldn't say the trooper was in a rush. He kind of took his time grabbing the taser and kind of like walking and then like jogging after the guy. He does deploy the taser when the guy rounds the corner of the Taco Bell drive-thru, and the guy goes down. I wasn't really sure whether it was from the taser or from the curb that he was on when he stepped off the curb and went to the pavement, but the guy goes down. You can see the wires from the deployed taser, the guy gets off the ground. Not a lot of communication from the trooper. You know, normally you're yelling taser, taser, or giving commands to the bad guy. None of that going on yet. Bad guy gets up off the pavement, and there's a good taser cycle after that. He locks him up. Guy face plants face down onto the pavement, but then he gets up again and he starts running. And there's a brief touch and go. Guy breaks out. Now he's running through a parking lot, and there's this truck coming towards him. And I'll be if that truck didn't hit him with the front end of the truck and plaster the guy on the ground again. So now the trooper runs up on him. Trooper still got the yellow taser in his hand, and he runs up on the bad guy. And what's the bad guy doing? You can see a bulge in his right ankle, and he's going down for his right ankle. He's got an ankle holster on, and he's got like a chrome gun. It looked like a revolver to me, and he's going for the gun. And so he grabs the gun, produces it, and now the trooper realizes the guy's, you know, arming himself with a gun from the ankle holster, and he pulls out his gun and he neutralizes the bad guy. But the bad guy ends up surviving, and he went to the hospital for about a week. So that's the way that ends. But man, this is dynamic, fluid, fast moving. This is the way it happens in law enforcement. So people that watch this video, and you'll be able to watch it on a Rumble channel tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. But what do you guys think? Any breakdowns on this? I'm sure it's just a walk in the park for LAPD, Chuck Springer.
Oh, especially with a taser deployment. How can you go wrong, right? I think he does a pretty good job. It's just the video, so you don't know. You know, I'm assuming that backups en route because it's a 211 suspect. Yeah, maybe there's some verbalization that can take place. But all in all, he does a pretty good job. He recognizes that the guy's going for a gun. And when that happens, you know what the intent is. When somebody's trying to arm themselves, it's pretty much game over at that point. But I think overall, pretty good job.
You know, I would have liked, you know, when the guy was down the first time, whether he tripped, you know, on the curb or whatever, I still, and this didn't look like he was a young kid, the trooper, I still want to see guys go hands-on. I mean, what a great opportunity to go hands-on with the guy's office, especially after you lock him up and he face plants. Move in. The guy's, you know, face down, move in and get him in a 3-point pin and handcuff him. It just seems so obvious to me. There's a lack of willingness to go hands on and a huge reliance on that taser. And I wish we could get away from that. I think it's a training issue that's going on around the country. Maybe some agencies are still doing it right. I don't know if you guys feel the same way or not, but I wish, especially, you know, well, Randy, how, what do you, LAPD, what do you think? I mean, Las Vegas Metro, LAPD. There's a little bit of a difference.
I want to just talk about the taser deployment for a moment. This is an appropriate time to use the taser. He did it exactly the way it should be. He didn't know the suspect was armed. We had a situation just a couple weeks ago where they knew the suspect had a gun, and they deployed tasers against the firearm, which ended in the death of a police officer. So in this particular set of circumstances where the officer didn't know the guy had a gun, that's the appropriate time to use the taser. And then, of course, it led to the shooting. But it's this reliance on the taser at inappropriate times that really has me concerned and has led to the deaths and serious injuries of cops all over this country.
Yeah, Randy's right. And what we're seeing is a hesitation. We are seeing cops go hands-on when they should be using some sort of tool, whether it's a taser, whether it's deadly force. We are seeing this hesitation in using force, especially deadly force. And as Randy so aptly says, you know, it's killing cops and it's got to stop.
Well, good coverage, guys. Thank you for the commentary. If you guys are ready, let's move in. We have another story with a video component. We got about 2 minutes before we take our next commercial break too. So let's hop into this next one here at rumble.com. Again, this is Butters, the name of the channel. Harris County deputies fatally shoot a suspect who's armed with a large butcher knife.
Get out of the car. Get out of the car. Are you fucking reach for anything? I will shoot you.
I didn't reach anything.
Hey, don't resist. You're going to get tased.
A deputy deployed his taser.
Get on the ground.
As deputies were pulling Dennis from the vehicle, Dennis produced a knife. Deputies discharged their weapons, striking Dennis.
And I hate knives. So this time we're in Harris County, Texas. A suspect, Ishmael Dennis, shot and killed by deputies in a medical facility parking lot in Northwest Harris County. And this happened on a Monday. So Harris County Sheriff's Office said the suspect did not follow orders, had a butcher knife on him. And I mean, how often do the bad guys follow orders anyhow, right? Investigators say the shooting happened. It's 10:30 p.m. outside the Kelsey Siebold Clinic. And it says the sheriff's office, a security guard calls the sheriff's office, reports that there's a guy in an SUV refusing to leave the property, and they think that he's been living in his car. So when the first deputy arrives on the scene, the man who's in his 60s, he is not following orders to roll the window down or to open the car door. So the agency says the deputy calls for backup. Good deal. In the meantime, he breaks out one of the SUV windows trying to get the guy out. And you really don't witness that on the video. You kind of see the backup kind of roll up and you wonder, hey, how'd that window get broken? Now you know how. So when the backup arrives, they open the door and they attempt to shock this guy with a stun gun, with a taser. And here's a quote saying, hey, they first attempted to use the taser. It had some effect. They weren't successful enough to get him to comply with the order, so they wound up physically removing him from the vehicle. He had a butcher knife in his hand. As soon as they get him out, pretty large knife. And at that point, the deputies discharged a firearm. And according to Assistant Chief Jay Nanny, how the cop did not get stabbed, I have no idea. I got some show notes on this, but when we come back from commercial break, we're going to break this thing down. But again, I hate knives. This is why. Well, commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Apianko. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, you're a chief or a sheriff, the founder, Daniel Kelly's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that website, it is gunlearn.com. LeoRoundtable.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. You know, we've been talking about a bad guy armed with a butcher knife. Harris County deputies, they fatally shoot this guy. He's armed with a large butcher knife. Now, I just went through the storyline. It has a tendency to be a little bit different than my show notes. So at the 2-minute and 5-second mark, deputies respond to the call. The security guard had already called police, punched the window, trying to get the guy out. And they think this guy's living in his car. He's refusing to leave a medical facility. And so at 2:17, the deputy attempts to physically remove the suspect from the driver's seat, and they deploy a taser, limited success on that. But then just about 20 seconds later, the suspect gets pulled out of the vehicle, and all of a sudden, he produces a knife. He had it in his hand. I don't know how they missed it, but they fire shots just 4 seconds later at 2:41. And so that's the way that ends. We have another body cam video of the same thing that starts at 2:45. Commentary on this one, guys. What do you think? Anybody? I know we got the stand. Okay, Chuck Springer from LAPD is going to start us off.
Well, the first thing I saw was, you know, why are you going up and breaking the window before your backup arrives? Just hold back until your backup gets there. You know, I think the like Randy said on the prior case, I think that was a good time to use the taser. My question to you guys, because I've been out of the mix for a little while, and on all these videos, I never see OC spray being deployed anymore.
Yeah,
are people good. Concerned with contamination? Because that was a very effective tool for me, especially if a taser didn't work. You know, you get that stuff in somebody's face, and that's very distracting for a while. So I was a little curious about that. I think as far as when the knife comes out, then it's kind of game over for him.
You know, let me take that OC one. You know, you're right. And when I was law enforcement, remember when we had a CS gas, right? And that's a dispersing agent. We had that in our mace sprays before OC pepper spray came out, right? So CS is a good dispersing agent. Because it doesn't blind you. You can see where you're running, but we've never really used OC pepper spray as a dispersing agent for like crowds and stuff normally, because you know everybody's immediately blinded. They can't see where they're going. But we used to take a hose or just a straw in a CS gas canister, and we would spray it in the car, and they would vamoose, right? They don't want any part of that, and they would X the car. You're right, Chuck. I don't see that being done anymore. I normally wouldn't do that with a pepper spray unless I absolutely had to, because of course, you know, they can't, it blinds them, but I don't see that. And I don't know how we got away from that. Occasionally I'll see a SWAT team doing that if they have a subject confined in an area, like in a room or something, but we don't see that being done anymore. I don't know why. Maybe they're doing it in Tulsa. I don't know, Travis.
Well, you know, we are seeing increasing dangers in these vehicle extractions. I lost a good friend trying to extract somebody from a vehicle. That's what this case started off as. And I don't see standardized training. I don't see a focus on training like I do, say, active shooters. Active shooter training is important. But, man, you're talking about we've standardized that. Every department does that. But when you talk about vehicle extraction training, it's all over the map, right? And great point with OC spray. I mean, what a great case use for that, where you could use a projectile with OC or OC, just spray it in the car and back up. Trust me, they're coming out of the car. But we had this over-reliance on a taser. We think it solves every single problem. But the problem is you're tethered to the suspect with a taser, and you're exposed. And so I think we'd have to start thinking outside the box, especially on vehicle extractions, because it's very dangerous that they're inside an enclosed area. They know exactly what's in that area. There's a reason they're not coming out of that area, and you have no idea, and you have to expose yourself to get them out. So it's a very dangerous thing to do. In a course I teach called Seconds for Survival, I have 24 videos about vehicle extractions, and you see this danger all the time. It's very hard to react to something when somebody comes up. These officers did a very good job when it happened. But man, you talk about, I'd love to see some studies and research done about the dangers of this, and maybe I just need to go do it. But I think every officer out there listening needs to understand this. I think we don't see the danger in vehicle extraction videos the way we do other things, because we're always walking up on vehicles. It becomes very comfortable to us. But when somebody refuses to leave a vehicle, there's a reason. And it's typically not because they're a lawyer. It's typically because they're hiding something. And if it's a weapon, that really puts us at a disadvantage.
You know, there is a new product out. And I mean, our sponsor, Compliant Technologies, they have the glove. And I tell you, I have seen that successfully used for vehicle extraction like there's no tomorrow. I mean, that, it, it, you know what? And Travis, you know, I know that you were going there. The longer you give the bad guy time to think about what he's going to do, it's only going to get worse, right? And the thing I love about the glove is that if you know you're going to do a vehicle extraction, all you need to do is get skin. I don't care if it's the top of the hand, the back of the neck, anything. If it's skin, I mean, it won't go through hair. And so we probably couldn't use it on Randy, as hairy as he is, but you know, it won't go through, I'm joking, Randy, but it won't go through hair, and it won't go through clothing. It won't go through a hat, but as long as you get skin contact, you're good to go. So that everybody doing a vehicle extraction, if you simply had one glove, I mean, they give two out, but if you just had one, you game over. That guy is coming out doing whatever you tell him to do. So I'd love to see more of that. And
Betsy. Well, and I think, you know, Travis, you make a really good point. I think one of the problems we have now is that lack of standardization. And we also spend too much time negotiating when we're on a traffic stop. We're far too, you know, in our day, the five of us, you know, you were extracting somebody from a vehicle in about the first 30 seconds that they said they weren't coming out. We brought them out. And now we talk and we beg and we plead and we got cameras and all that stuff. And that makes it more dangerous for the cops. And you're right. We don't do anything the same. It's kind of like back in the day, we didn't do felony stops the same, high risk traffic stops the same. We standardized this. We need to standardize this.
Yeah, we used to call it a rear window extraction, but they don't make those little windows in the cars anymore, right?
Oh, wow.
That was so fun.
Oh,
but Betsy's right. We didn't see this type of violence and extractions back in the day, because as soon as they wouldn't come out, we put hands on and jerked them out as quick as we could, and they couldn't make that decision. And the longer we negotiate, the longer this goes on. We're seeing this all over the country. We see it almost every week here on the show. And you know what? I'm just not going to talk a talk. I'm going to come back with something for everybody here and law enforcement to talk about it.
Love it.
Well, look at the first story that we talked about today with the Andrew Wayne, who is serving prison time for that incident in Colorado where they literally tried to negotiate this guy out of his car for, 5 hours or something ridiculous like that, and wound up in cops going to getting charged criminally because there is no standardization. You hit a really good point, Travis. There is no training for this. It isn't anything that I've ever seen as far as standardization. So that's really a good point. That's why you are the master trainer that you are.
Yeah, let's get this alarm thing going off, Chuck. Let's get some training, standardized training across the country with vehicle extractions. You know, we're just seeing more too much of this.
Well, there used to be. It was called Ask, Tell, Make. Right? I'm being a little facetious, but as you guys pointed out earlier, we're spending too much time negotiating with people. You know, at some point it's okay. It's over, buddy. You're coming out forcefully.
I got to say that one of the most, it was entertaining, both entertaining and effective is whenever you occasionally we'll see the officer, they'll call the canine guy out and he'll hoist the canine up to the open window and let him have access to the cockpit. And then you see a lot of movement and then you hear a lot of screaming and stuff coming out. And I tell you, that can be effective. I don't like to see the canines go in the car, but if they're going to do it and they got a video of it, I'm going to watch it. I don't want to miss that, but I do find that a little bit entertaining. I've actually seen that going on. I've seen a officer on the passenger side, a big black officer, open up the door, not knowing that the canine guy has just released the canine on the other side of the car through the open window. And I've seen that officer when he sees that he grabs the bad guy, pulls him out, and the canine's got a hold of the bad guy's leg, and the canine comes out with him. And I just remember the look on that guy, on that officer's face, when the canine is all over the bad guy and him at the same. It was just priceless. So, but any final words, guys? We've got just a couple seconds here before we wrap this thing up here. Any words of wisdom for any? Betsy is always good for words of wisdom. I mean, just look at her.
I think that we're seeing a resurgence of the public appreciating officer safety. In other words, the public appreciating us trying to save ourselves, those kids out there trying to save themselves. And I think we're going to see more of it.
I love it. Well, look, thank you guys so much. Betsy Brantner-Smith, MPA, we covered a lot of your articles today. You guys are killing it over there. And also Travis Yates at travisyates.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Lieutenant Chuck Springer. Thank you, guys. We should take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. 20 seconds, Randy, tell us what's going on.
Our National Law Enforcement Survival Summit, this is our signature training, will be September 22nd through the 25th in Las Vegas. This, if you have one training to go to this year, make it the National Law Enforcement Survival Summit. Go to thewoundedblue.org. And if you're suffering, you're hurting, remember, we're here for you, thewoundedblue.org.
You got it, guys. Gauls, Compliant Technologies, GunLearn, Blue the Gold, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. Thanks for watching the show tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.